You're listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone. This show will give you the tools and information for better health as you age. Now, here's your host, Kendra Vallone.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another show of Aging Redefined. I'm your host, Kendra Vallone, and I'm joined by my co-host, who is board certified in pulmonary medicine and internal medicine with advanced training in anti-aging, Dr. Larry Emder.
Hi,
Dr.
Emder. Good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Yes, I'm very glad that you're here, mainly because I don't know if you can tell in my voice, but I've got this cold thing coming along. Is it flu season yet? Are we talking about?
Well, we should be getting our flu shots. We're not quite right in the flu season yet.
We'll have to talk about that next week, though. We've got to hold it because don't we have Dr. Butera on?
Michael Butera is on next week to talk about why you should get your flu shot.
Right. To order me to get one. Got it.
That's why I'm jacked up about this show. We have just such phenomenal guests.
I know. Oh, well, today's awesome. So everybody's got to hang tight with us today.
Dr. Jeff Anthony from San Diego Sports Medicine will be talking to us today about the concussions and sports injuries.
Yes.
How cool is that?
And as a previous athlete, which is golf, don't even go there. That golf's not a sport. I know the look on your face. It's not funny. I'll pick his brain about a couple things.
Is golf really an athletic sport?
So you have to bear with me if you hear a few coughs throughout the thing. I don't know what this is. Like this chest cold thing. I mean, I won't sit too close to you or cuddle up, to give it to you. But you're the pulmonologist.
Yeah. Rest, push fluids, and prayer.
Prayer. Yeah, I'm working on that one.
9 times out of 10, this is usually a viral thing, and it should pass on its own.
Mm-hmm.
If you start having a fever or coughing up, pus, then you need to see your doctor and get antibiotics.
Pretty. Yeah. It's also something I've brought upon myself because of the wedding, which I had last weekend.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Wow.
Yeah, I know.
Newlywed. I saw a picture of the wedding. Absolutely amazing dress.
Thank you. Because it had feathers all over it.
Tell us about this dress. How did you...
It was like one of those. It was, strapless and had the sweetheart thing, which means like it kind of goes down in the middle. And then it's like fitted to the hips and then it just goes poof.
Yeah, but tell our audience how you got this dress. You had to camp out at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Well, in LA, there's this place that I'm sure all of our audience members out there are really excited to hear this. But in LA, there's this place where you can go and once a year, it's called Glamour Closet. They have all of the demo dresses, I guess, from all the places like Neiman Marcus and the big shopping centers, and they go to this one store, and then once a year they have a massive sale where all the dresses get reduced to like $500 or $1,000 or even $1,500 because some of them in there are worth 10 grand.
Wow.
And so you have to camp out. So I got there at like 4 a.m. and ended up with this amazing dress, which was it was like 10 sizes too big for me. So we had to get it brought in, and then I went through this period where wasn't eating because my seamstress made it too small, so I had to try to get into it.
We got to put a picture of this dress on the website.
Okay, I need to update our Facebook. So I'll have to do that. And then we can get all that information on there.
So you had perfect weather. We had a Santa Ana coming in.
It was beautiful. It was in Laguna Beach over by where Pageant of the Masters is. So yeah, it was really pretty. And we did our pictures beforehand. So I will fully tell people, like, this is my big thing. Take your pictures beforehand.
Yeah, get them out of the way.
I was thinking that's not cool because you want the groom to see you, as you're walking down the aisle. But really, we did this neat thing where, he turns around and then I'm walking toward him backwards. And then he gets to spin around and look at me and the photographer's there to take the pictures and the whole wedding party is there. And then we took pictures for 3 hours. So that you could not have done during the ceremony already, even though we didn't take pictures after the ceremony, we got in there and had to do like the father-daughter dance, the speeches, which went really long, and all this other stuff. And so by the time you really get to enjoy the party, you only have a couple hours. So heaven forbid we had decided to take the pictures during the ceremony or right after the ceremony. That would have been really that wouldn't have been any fun. It wouldn't have been any time to enjoy the party.
Well, the good news, you had your cold after the wedding, not before the wedding.
Yeah, and I think that was the reason for the cold, though. It was all the stress buildup. Is that a common thing? Like, all the stress builds up, and then you just let it go? And
people get sick under, major stresses in one's life. So when does that occur? If you have a job change, if you, lose a job, you have to move, if you get married. Now, these big stresses in our life do affect our immunity and probably set us up for, little
How do they affect the immunity? They just kind of break because you're not sleeping and that kind of thing. So you just get
under stress, your cortisol levels probably drop, and that helps fight infection. Mm. Probably affects your white blood cells. But it's been well studied that under periods of stress, people tend to get sick. And I think planning a wedding would stress.
Yeah, it was very stressful. It was very stressful, and screaming over everybody at all the events. And our wedding was not one day. I mean, we had, like I said, 35 Aussies come over. And so the party went for 2 weeks. So I basically was in the mindset of, if you didn't enjoy the party the night of the wedding, you would have enjoyed one of the other 10 nights that we were all at the rehearsal dinner party that my mom threw, and all the other events that were going on. So,
Well, Aussies at a wedding, I mean, that sounds like a party right there.
Oh, yeah.
Party ready to happen.
There were one-arm push-ups without shirts on and groomsmen switching clothes. And, yeah, it was kind of...
Well, you should have told your Aussie friends that you do a radio show with Larry Emder.
I know, that's right.
Because there's a Larry Emder TV host.
Very popular in Australia. The Price is Right,
right,
doesn't he?
Mm-hmm. And when I go to Australia and I call a restaurant, I get the best seat in the house.
Do you really?
Yeah, because they think I'm. I am
when you're in Australia.
Yeah, I'm not there very often.
Maybe once
in my life.
And what the last time you were there, you dove the Great Barrier Reef, which you made sure we all noted.
Yeah, absolutely. Right? So, besides your wedding, what do you have new for us in medicine today?
New for medicine. Okay. Well, I do have something that. Okay, so we're in October. We should honor the month of breast cancer awareness.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. And I think I tried to do this last week and I did something with.
Yeah. I think every week is breast cancer.
Right. I did. Last week was not as successful. But breast cancer is the second leading cause of cancer-related death among women in the U.S., which is pretty amazing. So an estimated 232,340 women will be diagnosed with breast cancer, and about 40,000 of them will die from the disease in 2013. And this is all according to the National Cancer Institute. But the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, so the FDA, has approved the first drug to be used in the early stages of breast cancer treatment. Pertuzumab, P-E-R-J-E-T-A, Perjeta is what it's called, Perjeta, will be used as part of a complete treatment regimen for patients before surgery. It can be prescribed to patients with HER2 positive.
Right.
Locally advanced inflammatory or early stage breast cancer, which is really a tumor greater than 2 centimeters in diameter with positive lymph nodes. Are you familiar with all this stuff?
Oh, all the time.
Okay.
Basically, the advances they're seeing in the breast cancer therapy is amazing, and improving survival and quality of life. So I'm not surprised they're coming up with new drugs. That's great.
Oh, yeah. And it is something that can be used. It's in combination with chemotherapy and other drugs. But Dr. Charles Vogel, who's an internationally renowned breast cancer physician at the University of Miami Cancer Center, said that in a lot of these cases, because they've obviously tested the drug, although surgery was still required, in some of the cases, the pre-surgery treatment has converted a patient from needing a mastectomy to only needing a lumpectomy, which was a significant improvement. So I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah, and what we always talk about is prevention that women can do is keep the amount of exogenous estrogen in their diet and their bodies low.
Right. And what were some of the ways that I know we talked about that last week, but as a reminder.
Well, some of the makeups have estrogen compounds in them. So when you buy your makeup, you should always ask if there's any estrogen in them because.
And then it seeps into your skin?
It seeps into your skin.
No kidding.
Then we talked about with a bottled water.
Oh, the plastic bottles.
The plastics have, a phytoestrogen in it.
Mm-hmm.
There's obviously estrogen in soy. So, I personally eat soy, but I wouldn't want to be on a soy every day of the week because you're getting a lot of phytoestrogen.
So if you're going to Starbucks and thinking I'm going to order
a
soy latte,
I want to
maybe don't do that every day.
Don't do that every day.
Okay.
So limit the amount of extra estrogen that you're being exposed to.
Right.
And then you want to kind of burn the estrogen you have. And when I say burn, I mean exercise.
Okay.
And then you want to detoxify your body, and you do that by increasing the amount of fiber in your diet.
Huh.
And the last thing is keep your weight down. Everybody's afraid of breast cancer, but you know, obesity is a risk factor for breast cancer. So
really?
Get that weight down and you wouldn't eat these cancer drugs. How cool is that?
Very interesting.
So I've
comes down to nutrition. It always comes down to nutrition and Dr. Emder's funky diets.
Yeah. So I got something scanning through the paper yesterday.
Okay, go for it.
You even know who Bill Walton is? He's like a great basketball player.
Okay.
I think played for University of Indiana.
I was going to say something else. We'll just go with, I did.
He went up against Magic Johnson at Michigan State, one of the schools I went to. Woo, woo. And they took number one. But anyway, he needed a knee replacement. Okay.
Okay.
And Bill lives in San Diego.
Okay.
Doing a knee replacement on him would be a challenge. Why? Because he's so tall.
Okay.
And he had it done at the Coronado Hospital with one of the doctors we had on the show a couple weeks ago, which is Peter Hansen.
I was going to say, was it Dr. Hansen?
Yeah, it was Dr. Hansen.
Did he do the stem cell thing?
He didn't do the stem cell he was past the stem cell.
Evidently. Oh, okay.
But it was, I want to make sure I get it right. Dr. Peter Hansen and Joseph Jenewicz, J-A-N-K-I-E-W-I-C-Z, replaced his knee, and they actually used some, computerized surgical techniques, and has an amazing result.
How cool is
that? And Dr. Hansen was on our show.
Uh-huh.
Actually, you can hear that show going through the podcast and downloading.
Yep, absolutely. Downloading Aging Redefined.
I just made an appointment to see Dr. Peter Hansen because I'm going to try to prevent my knee replaced and have some stem cell injections.
With the stem cell thing. Okay.
And that's the thing about the show. We have experts on the show give us great information. And if you've missed one of our previous shows, you can go onto iTunes under podcasts and put in Aging Redefined and it'll pop up.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's free. So there's no excuses not to hear our show. But we've got like legit guests on this show, is totally awesome, which you've got to stay with us because the guest we've got on today, you'll hear him just in a minute. He's amazing. So stay tuned and we will be right back after this message from our sponsor.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
No one wants to think about having a heart attack, but should you or a loved one need life-saving care, you want to go to a hospital that has a track record for saving lives. I'm Dr. Mike Mikowski, a cardiologist at Alvarado Hospital. As a designated San Diego Heart Attack Receiving Center, we recognize the importance of getting life-saving cardiac care. Our state-of-the-art cath labs offer life-saving treatment when you need it most. For information, visit alvaradohospital.com.
Alvarado Hospital is one of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
So welcome, listeners. I hear we're up to 10 listeners, we're really happy about that.
Welcome.
But we have great information that we're sharing each week on medically related information with physicians in the San Diego area. And we have a lot of experts. We had Dr. Bowie on the show from UCSD, who expert on neurology
dementia.
And you know, you can download that show if you want to listen. But today we have Dr. Jeff Anthony on the show, and he is a graduate of UC Santa Barbara, and he graduated from there.
Right, I know, I was impressed.
And he did it in 4 years.
Be very focused.
He went to medical school in Iowa at the University of Osteopathic Medicine in Iowa. He did his residency at Phoenix General and Good Samaritan Hospital in Phoenix, Arizona. And his fellowship right here in San Diego with Dr. Lee Rice at the San Diego Sports Medicine Center. And he's currently board certified in the family practice and sports medicine. and has other responsibilities. He's a physician for the Olympic Training Center in Otay, San Diego. He has been in the past a team physician for San Diego State football team, and he's traveled extensively 15 years with the team. And we welcome him to the show. So, Dr. Anthony, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
So tell us about what is sports medicine and how did you get into it?
Well, generally defined, sports medicine is just taking care of people that are interested and motivated to stay healthy. That's okay. Kind of the general description of it. Mm-hmm. You can get more specifically, and basically we just try to help people do what they would like to do to stay healthy. And so we help them to exercise, and we help them to prevent problems with exercise. And then we take care of the problems when they do exercise.
Well, Kendra, you're an athlete. So,
yes. Well, I kind of was.
Yeah.
I mean, not I kind of was. Yeah. I was. I am no longer because I probably should have gone to a sports.
Yeah. So.
Therapist.
Have you had any injuries? You think a sports medicine doc could help?
I was kind of going to ask. You know, when you think sports, at least when I was playing golf, the one thing that would always get me is like joints and bones and things like that. So I think ortho. But how are you different?
Great question. And mm-hmm. I do primary care sports medicine. And mm-hmm. I came out here in San Diego in the mid-80s. And at that time when I was trying to come out, most people said, well, but you're not an orthopedic surgeon. How mm-hmm. can you do sports medicine? Well, in the 80s is just when we start to look at how to more effectively and efficiently do sports medicine. That's when concussions started to become more mm-hmm. recognized. That's when heart problems were an issue. Orthopedic surgeons don't really take care of heart problems. Mm-hmm. So all these other things. In addition to all non-surgical orthopedic stuff, so swimmer's shoulder, runner's knee, Achilles tendonitis, a lot of times the orthopedic surgeons, which are great docs, mm-hmm. they tend not to treat that type of stuff because they're great at surgery. So mm-hmm. all that non-surgical stuff is our niche.
Okay, and I suppose you're all-encompassing, right? So if somebody goes to you because they do have Achilles tendonitis or whatever, because we did have another doctor on the show, Dr. Chodas, who works on feet, and he talked about Achilles and stuff. But if you go to like Dr. Chodas, but you have other issues or it could be other things, you're more likely to diagnose that. Is that correct?
Statement? We're more of a generalist. So yeah, a lot of times I send people to specialists to take care of a specific problem. But my background is more look at the whole body and see what the whole issue is and see what different factors. If somebody has Achilles tendonitis, it may be that they have a shorter leg. It may be that they have pronation. They have other issues that might have contributed to that. So we kind of look at the whole picture and put that into the perspective.
So if you've got somebody or, for audience members out there that might have kids that are wanting to become, serious athletes, is it a good idea to think, gosh, you would make a really good primary physician for them? Or I heard Dr. Emder was saying something about you work with all the Olympic athletes, right? You must have some good stories there.
Mm-hmm.
But is that kind of a good statement to say that maybe people should be moving towards that direction and then you can kind of keep an eye on them?
Well, I'm kind of a biased person to ask, but the answer is yes.
Yeah. Well, I'm just thinking, what would have kept me in sport longer? That's a possibility. You just, right. You start breaking down and you're Googling what to fix.
It's actually a lot of fun. A lot of our patients are, like I said, they're motivated and interested in keeping healthy. And that, mm-hmm. that means exercise a lot of times. And so what we do is we try to find ways to allow them to exercise to stay healthy without increased risk of injuries. And if they start to get an injury, then we can a lot of times cross-train them or get them into something else so they can still meet their need but not get injured.
Okay.
What about like the weekend warrior that goes out and injures themselves? Do you have any programs that kind of make them healthier and their choices of what they do on weekends?
Especially as we get older, it's harder on your body to be a weekend warrior. It's better for our bodies to do things more consistently with everything. You want to consistently brush your teeth. If you brush your teeth just on Saturday, that's not going to work as well. But if we consistently brush your teeth or take care of your body or exercise, it's much better, especially as you get older. When you're younger, you can get away with almost anything. But as we get older, yes, we would like to do it a little more consistently. Now, to answer your question, there's a lot of things you can do to take care of the weekend warrior. If you just go out there, and let's say if you're running, if you run 15 miles once a week, that's harder on your body. So if we can modify that and start off a little bit slower, gradually increase and warm up before you get into your activity, and then cool down afterwards and stretch afterwards, then you'll last a lot longer than if you just go out there and bang out 15 miles.
Wow. So do you also work on giving like exercise plans and regimens? And do you guys have personal training at your facility or?
We, at our facility, we do family practice and sports medicine. So again, our basic is family practice. Mm-hmm. But with the sports medicine, we also have physical therapy, and we have physical therapists there that take care of all the rehab that we need. We have dietitians, we have exercise physiologists, we have trainers. We have pretty much the whole thing. We have psychologists, we have dietitians.
Wow. You've got to be churning out some well-trained athletes there.
Yeah. Well, we see a lot of different types of athletes, and Larry kind of mentioned that, but we work down at the Olympic Training Center. We work at San Diego State University. We work at Cuyamaca College and San Diego Christian College, and we take care of 8 different high schools, and so a plethora of different type. You mentioned the breast cancer awareness.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we cover, Michelle Look is in our practice, and she's the national director for the Susan G. Komen
3D
Breast Cancer Walk, which is coming up in November.
Okay.
And by the way, you talk about athletes. They are an inspirational group of people. You know, these are people that come out for a cause. They come out for a reason to exercise. And they may not look like they're in shape, but I tell you what, when we work in the tents and you see these people come in after walking 15 miles, they got to walk 60 miles, by the way, 60 miles in 3 days. And they'll come in and they may not be used to walking that much. And they have blisters and they have IT bands and they have all these tendonitis. And they come in, you say, oh, guys, this looks pretty bad. You probably shouldn't do it. No, doc, you don't understand. I'm going to do this.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it. You figure out a way to get me out there because I'm going to be doing it. Because they have a cause to do it. And so they're going to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And these are the most inspirational group of athletes I've ever taken care of.
That's great.
Wow, that's impressive.
Yeah.
So tell us about, a mother's, their son wants to get involved with the football program in high school.
Uh-huh.
Is it a good thing to do? Is it safe to do? And what's your feeling of athletes in high school?
Well, we take care of a lot of high schools. I'm the physician for San Diego or for Santa Fe Christian High School, but we take care of a lot of different high schools. I think that sports are important for kids to get involved with. I think team sports are great for kids to get involved with. With anything, there's always risk. There's pros and cons to anything that you do. There are risks to playing football, just like there's risks to playing lacrosse. There's risk to playing most different type of activities. So you have to weigh those risks and see how important it is for you to do that activity and see a lot of that is your desire. If they really want to get in there, usually we can allow them to do that, but there is a risk to doing that. You're right.
So at most high school football games, is there a physician at the sideline or should there be?
That's a great question. Here in San Diego, it's a big urban area. Most schools have a team physician associated with it. They also have a team athletic trainer, which is just as important because the athletic trainer will pre-tape them. They'll get them ready for it. They'll help take care of their injuries. They get to know each of the kids, so they know their personalities. But to answer your question, most of the schools here in the big city do have a physician associated with that. A lot of the schools in the rural areas don't have a team physician, and there are disadvantages with that, yes.
So as we're talking about, kids growing up or parents that have these kids that want to be athletes, obviously they are, a good patient for you or, to be sending them over to you. But what about just kind of the average Joe? Like who would be a great candidate to have you as their primary?
Well, again, I'm biased.
Right. And that's fine. I'm just curious because, Dr. Emder came up with that, you were asking about that weekend warrior and
right,
I'm just
sure.
kind of thinking, how does that tie in?
So especially as we get older, but for every age, you can go through and there's 4 or 5 things that are important for you to do for health. And this is, when I say health, I mean not only psychological health or mental health, but I also mean physical health. I mean staying away from cancer. I mean, warding off heart disease. So 75% of people will die from heart disease or cancers. So those are the 2 things we want to target to avoid, right? Mm-hmm. The best way to avoid those things is regular exercise. It's mm-hmm. watching your weight. It's correct diet. It's maximizing your sleep. Make sure you're sleeping well. It's reduction of stress. So those 5 things, if we do, you will reduce your incidence of cancers and reduce your risk of heart disease.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, for anybody, watching your diet, watching your weight and exercise is important for regular health. Now, on top of that, if you enjoy exercise or if you want to get more motivated, then we can help you to get in that mode so that you can exercise better. So it's not only for your mental health, but it's also for your physical health and warding off diseases.
Got it. Okay. So, you know, just an average woman that might enjoy her gym in the morning, like me, like I could walk into your office and you've got other doctors and I could, you know, look at that.
I think we have your next primary care physician.
Well, you know what? I'm new to San Diego and I'm really trying to figure out where I'm going. But at the same time, you know, there are questions. I mean, I'm not as active in sports as I used to be. Granted, I'm playing golf every other day, you know, whatever. But
a sports medicine physician will be able to take care of your general health.
Yeah.
Or deal with your.
So I'm thinking like that could be good because let me tell y'all, you know, I've got problems. Yesterday I woke up and I couldn't turn my neck and who knows what that was from. Probably the pillow, but
at the same time, it could
have been something very active. I don't know. I can't make any promises, but, okay. But I think, Dr. Anthony, we got to take a quick break
here. Information.
Yes.
We'll be right back.
We will be right back with some more, we're going to detail this. We've got info on concussions. So stay with us and we'll be right back.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right. I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com, or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
When it comes to treatment of heart disease, there are many choices, but there's no better choice than Alvarado Hospital, right here, close to home. I'm Dr. Mike Michalski, a cardiologist with Alvarado Hospital. I am proud that our specialists bring a level of knowledge, skill, and technology that have greatly improved the lives of those in our community for the past 40 years. For more information about our cardiovascular and stroke services, please visit alvaradohospital.com or call 1-800-ALVARADO.
Alvarado is proud to be part of the top 15 health systems in the nation.
So, welcome back. And I think in one of our earlier part of the show, I was talking about Bill Walton and his recent a knee replacement, and evidently you know Bill personally. So, can you tell us about you know your relationship with him and what's going on?
I can tell you about some of the stuff. I don't want to get too in depth.
Yeah.
No, I do know Bill. Bill is a great guy. It was kind of neat because I grew up, you know, in awe about his basketball prowess. But I am involved with Challenge Athlete Foundation, which is a great foundation that raises money for challenge athletes. And it's been going on since, I believe, 1992 and has raised about $42 million.
Wow. Gosh, that's a lot.
In that time.
Yeah.
And the money goes towards challenge athletes to allow them to do some type of sport, some type of activity. If an athlete had their leg injured or lost or in the military and they had their arm shot off, the Challenge Athlete Foundation helps to provide prostheses to allow them to do the activity that they'd like to do, wheelchairs, et cetera. In the last Paralympics, I believe that Challenge Athlete Foundation provided 23% of these challenge athletes some type of prostheses or wheelchair or whatever to allow them to compete in the Paralympics. So anyway, back to Bill. Bill is involved with Challenge Athletes. He's raised a lot of money for them.
Right.
And so he is doing a ride down the coast this year. So every year, the Million Dollar Challenge is a group of at least 100 people that raise up to $1 million and more to benefit the Challenge Athlete Foundation. Well, Bill is involved with that. He doesn't play basketball anymore, but he rides his bike. And he rides his bike all the way down the coast. So we're actually leaving Friday, this Friday, and it will take us a week. We fly up to San Francisco on Friday, and then we leave Saturday, and we ride about 100 miles a day.
Wow.
Down the coast. There's about 110 people, and about 10 of them are Challenge athletes themselves that have one leg or one arm that, because of a prosthesis or a special bike or a wheelchair, it allows them to ride their bikes down the coast.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I mean, what's amazing, he's just 4 months out from his total knee replacement.
See, that's right, because when I came in, you were mentioning about his he had a total knee surgery. You're right. Yeah. And about 2 months after that, he started riding his bike again. And I just saw him, we went up to Santa Barbara, and he rode his bike along Santa Barbara. Same way. He's out there riding his bike. He does a great job. He loves riding his bike.
Oh, well, that means a lot to me as I sit here rubbing my knee during this.
With your carpal tunnel hands. And,
yeah, right.
Yeah, whatever.
My sore neck.
Yeah. One of the things that Bill says is he says, you know what, we're all challenge athlete. It's just a matter of degree. You know, there are people that had a leg shot off or two legs shot off. And there's people that have an ankle injury that they can't compete in the activity that they want to get into. And so we're all challenge athletes, and we all try to help each other to compete
That's
best we
great.
Can.
Yeah. Well, you know, I was asking you in an earlier segment about, you know, high school football. And one of the big concerns, you know, being a parent with a son that was actually playing lacrosse, but not football, is head injury. And the big, you know, thing is what we hear about is concussion and, you know, in professional athletes with concussion. So What actually is a concussion?
So a concussion, loosely defined, is some injury to the brain. It's a post-traumatic injury to the brain. It can happen from head-to-head contact. It can happen from a whiplash-type injury. So it's some type of injury to the brain that does not present on CAT scan or MRI. The only way it presents, really, is by checking their mental status, see if they have any mental laxity or mental dysfunctions.
So how do you pick it up? I mean, what's physical finds do you look for, actually?
Let me back up a little bit. When somebody has a head injury, you need to rule out neck problems, and you need to rule out bleeds inside the brain, because if somebody gets hit hard enough, they can get a subdural hematoma or they can get a bleed inside the brain. That will show up on a CAT scan or an MRI. So that's the first thing that we look for. When somebody has an injury, you want to make sure their neck is fine. You want to make sure that there is no bleed inside the brain. If those are both ruled out, then the next thing you look for is a concussion or some type of injury to the brain that can affect that. So the way we access that is we check their balance. We check their mentation, their calculation. We see how their memory is. We ask them a question and ask them if they can remember that. We look at their eyes, make sure their eyes are tracking. You know, a lot of it is just looking in their eyes and see if they have that glazed over look or if they're there, you know.
So someone has a mild concussion. Mm-hmm. What's the initial treatment?
The main thing is we want to avoid them exposing themselves to any type of head injury until it all heals. The things that you worry about with a concussion, after the first two that we mentioned, you worry about what's called a second impact syndrome, which means if somebody had a concussion and then they get their head hit again, then it can cause a dramatic increased swelling in the brain, and it can lead to coma and even death. Mm. So one of the main things with concussion is you don't want to expose them to any type of potential injury until their brain is totally healed and the concussion has resolved.
That's like take weeks or months or years?
It depends on the severity of the concussion. It depends upon the individual, how many concussions they've had in the past. It depends upon if they have other factors like migraines or ADD, et cetera. So there's a lot of different factors for it. But the bottom line is you keep observing them, withholding them from sports until their brain heals. And the way we tell if their brain heals is, again, just by their physical exam. And then there's a couple other things that we'll probably talk about later as far as the computer test, the impact test, and that kind of stuff.
So just, I mean, to take it back to in layman's terms, is the brain actually like bumping up against the skull? Is that the trauma that we're talking about here?
Yeah.
Or is it just rattling in its, you know, but staying where it is? And
yeah. That's basically what it is that the brain is very soft. The skull is very hard.
Right.
So when you hit your head, the skull usually doesn't break. But the brain on the inside, which is like a sponge, will compress and it will bump against the bone.
Right. Okay.
And you can cause some biochemical changes that cause the concussion. Even though there's no bleeding there, there's still biochemical changes that reduce the function of the brain.
Got it. Okay. So why, I don't know if you were going to ask this, Dr. Emperor, but why can you not go to sleep after a concussion? You know, people are like, oh, stay awake.
Right.
What is the purpose of that?
The purpose of that is to rule out a subdural hematoma. It's not so much the concussion. I don't mind if you sleep with a concussion, but if somebody gets their head hit hard enough to cause a bleed inside the brain, that's what we call a subdural hematoma. And that subdural hematoma. And that bleed may start when they get their brain hit, but it bleeds slowly and it gradually increases. So it may not really present for 6-12 hours later. Okay. 95% of all subdural hematomas will present the first 24 hours, but, you know, 18 hours later, it may still not have presented.
And so what's the fear there, that if you fall asleep, you might not wake up because you'll be in a coma state?
Exactly. So if you get your head hit hard enough where there's a bleed inside your brain, then we want to observe that person and see if there is an increasing evidence of a bleed in your head, in which case we need to do a CAT scan or an MRI. Now, a lot of times you can tell by the severity of the hit. That's why the team physician is on the sideline, so that they can see how hard this hit was. If the hit was pretty hard, then a lot of times we'll do a CAT scan right then. If it was severe but they're clinically fine, then we just observe them. But if they start to have signs of an increased pressure in their brain from a bleed, and those signs are increasing headache, it's nausea, vomiting, it's unequal pupils, it's disorientation, it's loss of balance. So we look for those different signs to see if their bleed or if there's a potential bleed inside their head that's progressing. Mm-hmm. And if it is, then we get a CAT scan and we take care of it right off the bat. If there's nothing progressing, then we, again, just observe them and we talk to the parents to observe them through the night.
Okay.
What about the helmets? How good are the helmets today in protecting our kids?
You know, the helmets are much better than what they were several years ago. But a helmet really doesn't protect against a concussion, because a concussion is not just the contact, the head-to-head contact, but it's the deceleration of the brain inside the skull, or it's the shearing force of the brain inside the skull. So the headache will help to some degree, but it's not going to prevent concussions.
So I'm kind of curious about this post-hematoma. What, say it again? With the bleeding in the brain.
The bleeding in the brain. Okay, right. So the bleeding in the brain is not a concussion,
right?
But that's a bleed, right?
Right, so it's different. So, but we're talking about the brain swelling, things getting bigger. What kind of treatment do you do for that? I'm thinking, how do you bring the brain back down to not being so...
So let me break that apart, because there's two issues there. Okay. One is the brain swelling, which can come from an injury, and that may be just a concussion.
Okay.
The other issue you mentioned is bleeding. So if you hit your head hard enough to cause a ruptured blood vessel and actual bleeding inside the brain, then it's what we call a compartment syndrome, because your skull is very hard and it's a closed compartment. And if you get bleeding in there, then that's going to increase and it's going to squish the brain and injure the brain.
Right.
And in that scenario, usually you'll have more significant signs. So they'll be unconscious, or their pupil will dilate, or they'll start to vomit, or they'll have an increasing headache. So all those are signs of a bleed inside the brain. And those, we need to get them to the emergency room. We need to do a CAT scan. And if there is a bleed, then sometimes we'll burn a little hole in the skull to open that up a little bit.
Got it. I guess that's what I was looking for. I'm like, what do you do? How do you?
We try to release that pressure.
How do you do that? Okay.
So that's a bleed. It's not common, but it happens periodically.
Okay.
The much more common is the concussion. A concussion is where there's no bleeding there, but there's biochemical changes and an increased pressure in the brain, which causes problems with memory. It causes problems with calculation, with mentation.
And is that long-term or is that only short-term? Are there long-term effects to a concussion?
Right. That's a great question. Most concussions resolve as long as you take it easy. But we're now finding that there are some long-term effects of especially repeated concussions. If somebody has many small concussions, it can lead to problems down the road. And that's really hitting the press in the last couple of years with the NFL, with all these athletes that, all these football players that used to play, now they're not playing, but they continue to have headaches, or they continue to have depression, or there's suicidal ideation, or or other issues that are going on for long term because the repeated head injuries and concussions that they suffered mm-hmm. when they were in football.
Okay. I'm thinking of boxers as well, you know, like over the years, you see boxers, Muhammad Ali, right. Listening to him speak, you know, obviously right. there's a difference there, but, we're running out of time for this segment. So stay with us. Audience members out there, we will be right back with more information on sports medicine.
When Joe was in his last days, I was frightened of not having the right help at the right moment. So I set out to find a hospice I could call at any time, day or night. Only VITAS provided telecare, the 24-hour access we needed.
Mom's illness was overwhelming toward the end, and I wanted a hospice that had everything and everyone we needed. We discovered only VITAS employs more physicians who specialize in hospice care than anyone nationally. That made Mom and us feel better.
When Carol was dying, I promised she could stay at home and have the very best care. I did my research. Only VITAS had the experience to take care of the love of my life.
Call VITAS Innovative Hospice Care toll-free at 877-647-1124 for a free hospice evaluation. That's 877-647-1124. Or visit VITAS.com for more information.
Jack, I'm so glad you're here. I was just visiting with Dad.
Yeah, how's he doing?
Well, he's getting better, but the nurse said he needs a couple weeks in a skilled nursing facility for physical therapy with that hip fracture.
Skilled nursing? Like a nursing home?
Yeah, right, I know. I wasn't excited about it either. But after talking to her, it actually sounds like a really good idea. She said there are some facilities to be leery about, but I guess there's a company out there, Plum Healthcare, that really stepped it up to change the perception of nursing homes. She mentioned one of their top facilities in East County, Villa Las Palmas Healthcare Center. It's one of the top-rated facilities in San Diego. Plus, they have an amazing team of physical therapists with this indoor and outdoor rehab area that Dad really needs. Oh, and they're a subacute facility.
A what?
A subacute facility. Well, Dad doesn't need it, but it's for patients that need a ventilator to breathe. It's just good to know that they have that advanced level of care, just in case, you know? And they're one of the only facilities to have their own team of wound care professionals, which is really important for Dad after that surgery.
Yeah, but are they going to care about Dad like we do?
Yeah, I asked that too. I guess a lot of nursing homes use nursing registries or rehab companies to outsource their staff. The whole group at Villa Las Palmas is in-house, so they won't be changing on him all the time. They'll get to know him and push him every day to get better and stronger than he was before.
No kidding. So do we have to make a reservation or call or what?
The nurse said we can call and schedule a time to go tour the facility. The admissions team will walk us through the building and the whole insurance thing, co-pays, and so on.
Is it going to be expensive?
Well, Villa Las Palmas takes all insurances and HMOs, so that's good. But because Dad has Medicare, everything's covered.
No kidding. Okay, well, I'm liking this place already.
Yeah, Dad seemed to like the idea. He heard the food was good.
All right. Well, should I make an appointment?
Oh, look at you being responsible.
Hey, you know me. I want to check out the food.
Yeah, well, check out the website, VillaLasPalmasCares.com, or just call them, 619-442-0544. I think we're all learning that aging is definitely changing.
So we're on the show today with Dr. Jeff Anthony, who's bringing us up to date on the latest and greatest with the concussions and that our professional athletes and our amateur athletes can suffer.
Mm-hmm. High school football.
I understand there's a testing that you do in your office to assess athletes for their tendency for concussion. Can you tell us about what the test is and how is it done?
Yeah. So let me get a little background. By the way, concussions don't only happen in football players. You know, they can happen in all sorts of sports. You know, we see a lot in concussion. We see in soccer. Cheerleaders, you know, a lot of times I'm covering a football game and there's an injury behind me and a cheerleader, you know, they do some amazing feats too. So mm-hmm. it can happen in any sport that you get an injury to the brain. So by the way, just a little caveat, concussions are one of the reasons I started traveling with San Diego State football. So when I came out here in the mid 80s, like I said, most of sports medicine was orthopedics. And so we didn't travel with the San Diego State football team. We took care of the athletes here, but once they traveled, we didn't do it. And then this one game, it was in Wyoming, which is at altitude, 7,600 feet, and it was in late 80s, and they had a serious concussion. And so the orthopedic surgeon, which traveled with the team, called me up and said, "Guys, he had a concussion. We're at altitude. Should we fly home?" I said, "Well, does he have this and this?" And the orthopedic surgeon at the time is a good friend of mine. He says, "Okay." So when he got back, from then on, we traveled with the team.
Oh, so. Wow.
Orthopedic surgeon and a primary care sports medicine physician always traveled with San Diego State's football team, and it was kind of started with concussions back in the 80s when we were just starting to get to know that.
That makes sense.
So to answer your question, the main testing for concussions, because there's no bleed, is to access their mental ability, to see if they can remember things, to see if they can calculate, see if they can mentate, see what their balance is. So those are the main things that we look at. Well, in the last 6-7 years, they have come out with a computerized test that you can access those parameters. You can access what their memory is like, how well they can calculate, how well they can mentate. And it takes about 25 minutes. The one that we use here in San Diego is called the IMPACT test. We use it at the Olympic Training Center. We use it at San Diego State University. We use it at Cuyamaca College and San Diego Christian College, and probably 5 of the high schools that we take care of. Now, yes.
Now, what do you do with somebody like me that has horrible balance, and I probably can't compute math problems very well anyway? So Kendra had a concussion a long time ago. We just never fixed it.
So without getting personal here, that's a great question, and that's where I was going next, is that this IMPACT test is a great test, but it's much more accurate and helpful if we get a baseline. Because you're right, we don't know what their ability is before.
I could just see my family going in the room. No, she couldn't do that anyway.
That's right. So especially at the high schools, I'm trying to encourage all the high schools to get baseline tests for any contact sport, you know, football, lacrosse, et cetera. So if they get a baseline IMPACT test, then we have that. And so if they do get a concussion, now I can compare it, and then I can see when they come back up to baseline.
Got it.
So that's a great question.
So that all makes sense.
And we're trying to do that. The issue initially was funding, but now there's a couple programs that allow it to be cheaper. And so a lot of the high schools are starting to go this direction. But it's an invaluable tool, especially if we can get the baseline test.
And is it a machine or is it a written test or what is it exactly?
It's a computerized test. So it's almost like playing a video game where it takes 25 minutes. They sit in front of the computer. And it'll ask you a question, and then it'll go to the next screen. It'll ask you to remember what they ask.
Okay.
It'll ask you to remember diagrams. It checks your reflexes, how quick you are with the mouse.
Okay.
So yeah, it's not an easy test either.
Are high schools starting to allow you guys to be more? And when I say you guys, I mean like, you know, the sports medicine primary care physicians to be more involved. Like, for example, if something does happen on the football field and it's a big game, not that I would think a coach would do something like that, but to say, no, he can still go out there, he's got to win us the game, versus you coming on board and saying that is not a good idea.
Right. Another great question. And things are changing, especially here in California, because a couple things. One is that there's now a state law that if a kid does have a concussion, he cannot play the rest of that day. He's got to be out. He can't play the rest of that day. So the question is, does he have a concussion or not? Mm-hmm. If you don't have a physician there or an athletic trainer there on the sidelines, sometimes you don't know. I got a call from a friend of mine who's back in the Midwest, and there was no physician on the sideline. It's a rural school. There was just 2 teams, 2 coaches, and a referee. And the opposing coach said that the home team's star player had a concussion. Went to the referee kicked him out of the game because the referee can't diagnose it. So he says, okay, if he thinks he has a concussion, then he's out of the game.
No kidding. Oh, right? That's cheeky.
So here in San Diego, where we play, whenever there's a football game and we go on the field and we tell the ref, okay, we're a physician, we know, we're sports medicine, we know concussions, they always say, great, if there's any question, I'll go to you, because I don't want to make that decision. I don't want to kick anybody out of the game. I want you guys to make the decision. So yeah, it's much more recognized. The referees are great here in San Diego. So they allow you to come out in the field anytime that there's any injury.
Oh, really?
Yeah, their goal is to make sure the kids are safe. You know, they want to play a good game. The coaches like to win. But even the coaches are, you know what, our goal is to make sure that the kids are safe.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I take it, I think we jumped off the testing question, but that's not, you can't do that on the field, right? That has to be done in your office?
Correct. That test we don't do on the field. In fact, if somebody has a significant concussion, they really can't do that test because it gives them too much of a headache. So we don't do that test until their symptoms start to abate and they get better, and then we do the test. And one of the main reasons that we do the test is to help us decide when they can get back out there to play, but it's also to help us reduce their activity. I've already told you that if you have a concussion, if you get your head hit again, then you're going to have much more problems. Well, I can tell you, it also makes your concussion worse if you stress yourself mentally. So now if a kid has a significant concussion, we'll go to his teachers and say, you know what, he can't take a test this week. He may not even be able to go to school this week. So we need to stratify things, because you don't want him to take a test when he has a concussion, because he's not going to do as well. He can't remember as well. He can't think as well. He can't calculate as well. So this impact test helps us to objectify when we can get them back into school also, so they can take their test, et cetera.
No kidding. Any high school kid that just heard this segment is like, Mom, I know I have a concussion. It's not working.
That's right. We can put it up. You know, most of the kids want to get back to a sport. And so a lot of times they will deny they have a headache. They deny that they have any problems. And so you're trying to assess if they do. Well, this impact test helps us to assess that. Because even though they say they don't have any symptoms, if they can't think or they can't calculate, then it helps us to objectify.
Is it possible to get a concussion without knowing that you have one? Like if there was not a massive impact? And I ask you this because I know there are some times that I turn my head and it almost feels like my brain moved in a different direction than my skull. And I get this weird twisty thing. I know. I have a lot of issues. I know. But is it possible, or is it always like massive contact?
So a concussion by definition is a post-traumatic change in neural function. So by definition, it's something after some type of trauma.
Okay.
So turning your head really quickly, it's not
that
likely.
That might give you a headache though. I mean, like I have to throw that out there. Like you know.
Again, that's another good question, because you can have a headache and not have a concussion and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times it's tough to diagnose a concussion. So for example, during 2 days or what we call Hell Week, the kids are pounding their heads against somebody else twice a day, you know, 3 hours twice a day. Most of them, 20% of them get headaches. Well, is that a concussion or not? Usually it's not. But if they keep doing that, that can cause a concussion. So sometimes it's difficult to differentiate a regular headache from a real concussion. And the headaches, you know, we don't want them to continue to do that. But a headache, they can still play. A concussion, we don't want them to play yet.
Got it. Okay.
Well, let's change gears and let's talk about some of the other sports injuries that you may see in your practice.
Mm-hmm. So in primary care, family practice, we see a lot of sports injuries. Because we specialize in sports medicine, we tend to get a lot of second opinions, and we get people that are more active, the weekend warriors and that kind of stuff. So I see a whole ton of injuries in our practice. Things like swimmer's shoulder, which is an impingement of the rotator cuff muscle with swimmers because they're swimming a lot. We see a lot of runner's knee, which is patellofemoral syndrome or patellar tendonitis. So a lot of tendonitis type of injuries. Plantar fasciitis, which is an injury to the foot or a pain in the foot with runners, is another common thing that we see.
And what do you normally do? Rest and non-steroidals and heat?
So, yeah, with most tendonitis or most overuse type syndrome, the treatment protocol is very similar. Number one is we want to modify the activity or reduce the things that make it worse.
Okay.
It doesn't mean that we have to totally stop. In fact, I rarely tell somebody they can't do anything, they need to sit on the couch. That rarely helps. But we want to modify the activity or cross-train or change the things that's actually making it worse. So that's number one. Number two is we want to ice it. Ice does a lot of beneficial things. It helps reduce the swelling. It helps to increase the deeper circulation. It helps to reduce the pain. So we use the ice for 15, 20 minutes whenever you can, depending upon how severe the injury is.
What about heat? Isn't heat good for some cases?
Heat is great for arthritis.
Oh. Okay. But
what heat does is heat brings more fluid to that area. And if you have an injury to that area, you have injury to the blood vessels. And so if you heat that area, it's going to cause more swelling. Well, if you get a lot of swelling, it's counterproductive to the healing of that injury. So we tend not to heat a new injury. Okay, if it's a new injury, we tend to do more of the icing of that. Now, there are some controversy in that, but generally speaking, in sports medicine, we tend to ice more than heat. Now, I'm talking about specific heat, so like a heating pad.
Okay.
Is not something I usually recommend. However, a jacuzzi is great. For back problems, it's great. That generalized heat, where it heats up the whole body, is not as bad as localized heat, which brings more swelling to that specific injury.
Okay? Oh, interesting.
So for the specific site, we tend to ice that to reduce the swelling and increase the deeper circulation.
Okay.
So
everybody get a jacuzzi.
Yeah.
I have a jacuzzi.
Do you use it?
I'm in it at morning and night.
Oh,
so
nice.
I don't know if that's good or bad, but it relaxes me at night so I can go to sleep. And then in the morning, you know, it helps me to get that knee working.
Yeah. So let me just finish off. So with treating any type of overuse or tendonitis type of injury, we've modified the activity. We've iced it. The next thing is we want to stretch it, because anytime that you have an injury, the body will contract around it. All the muscles contract, and they contract so much that they don't allow the circulation there to get there to heal it. So we want to stretch that out.
This is just great information.
I know. I think we could keep going, but we're out of time.
So we need to tell our audience how to get a hold of you and your associates if they want to get a primary care physician who's also expert in sports medicine.
Yeah. So we have two different offices. We have 12 physicians. The website is sdsm.com.
Mm-hmm. Got it. Okay. And your SDM. Office is one is by Grossmont. By Alvarado Hospital.
One office down by Alvarado Hospital. Mm-hmm. Then we have another office up here in Sereno Valley.
Got it.
And the best way, like I said, is just sdsm.com, sandiegosportsmedicine.com.
Perfect. And Dr. Emder, you've got a website?
Yes, just drlarryemder.com.
Perfect. And we've got a Facebook page, Aging Redefined Radio, and our podcast as well. So if you've got any questions or have a topic you'd like us to talk about on the air, please feel free to shoot us a message and we'll get right back to you on that. So thanks so much for joining us. Thanks, Dr. Anthony, for being here today. And we'll talk to you all next week.
You've been listening to Aging Redefined with your host, Kendra Vallone.